1400
Recording
hours.
Recording in progress.
We resume our inquiry. I recognize Advocate Mayosi. Ms. Mukhaladi, are you there?
I am back, Chairperson. I'm here.
Thank you. Welcome back, Advocate Mayos.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Ms. Mukhaladi, before the lunch break, we had started to delve into the section of your affidavit that deals with what you call the unhealthy working environment at the PPSA, and you had taken the committee through the issue of the backlog and the setting of targets, and how when you returned from your suspension, you noted that the focus at dashboard meetings was different, and it was only about the product and when that product would be delivered. Do you remember that, right? Just before we went to lunch?
Correct.
And if we can start at, I think you had said this at paragraph 112 of your affidavit, you had said that the PP showed no interest in some of the factors that are relevant to target setting that you mentioned in the previous paragraph, in paragraph 111, right?
Correct. Correct.
Yeah. So we were about to go into where you say you've experienced, in paragraph 113, you say you've experienced the PP's inflexibility on this score on a number of occasions, and you say you set out in the rest of your affidavit the instances where, well, the first instance where you experience this. And you say that with reference to an attachment called PM15, which is an email trail that is at on page 3989, Sepo. PM15 is on page 3989. But as email trails go, in order to understand the whole chronology of the conversation, you have to start at the end and get to the top. So if you could go to 3991, Sepo. And what you say in paragraph 114 is that a PM15 relates to reports that were to be completed by the various units and submitted to the PP on or by the 25th of October 2018, correct?
Correct.
So if we go to 3991, are you there? That's where this email trail begins, basically, PM15. Go to the bottom, 3991. Are you able to recall what that email was about? It's from Ms. Ntoriseng Mutsitsi. She was the acting COO at the time, correct?
Correct.
And this email is dated the 24th of October, 2018. So you were the executive manager at AJSD at the time, right?
Correct.
And Ms. Matsitsi is saying to you, as well as others, including Mr. Ndo, Lesedi, Abongile Matiba, Rodney, and so on, she's saying, dear colleagues, this is a reminder to submit your reports on the 25th of October, 2018, due for media release. Do you see that?
Yes, I can see that.
What was the date of the media release that she was talking about?
Media releases are normally planned for the end of the month. So this one, it was planned for the end of October, but the date was not yet confirmed.
Right, so it was for the end of October, but
yes,
the date...
it was for the end of October. So there were the tentative dates. Yes.
At the very latest, it would be the 31st of October, right?
Correct.
Right. She then asked all of you to submit your reports. Please submit your reports to Ms. Puna Mokgaladi tomorrow to enable her to submit them for QA. Mr. Singh's report is due on the 26th of October, 2018. You see that? You see that, Ms. Mokgaladi?
Can you repeat, Advocate Mayosi? There was an interruption in my connection.
Yes, I was merely reading Ms. Motsitsi's email of the 24th of October, where she was reminding you all to submit your reports on the 25th of October. Right?
Yes, correct.
Did you submit your unit's reports for the media release of the 31st or of the end of October 2018?
On that list, there are two reports that related to AJSD. I did not submit those reports, and I provided an explanation for the non-submission.
All right, go up, Tsepo, to 3990, which is the next. Yes. There. The bottom of 3990. Right. So on the 30th of October, you see them, Ms. Mokgaladi? Ms. Motsitsi then addresses that email. It's on this email trail at PM 15 that you've referred to in paragraph 114. She addresses an email on the 30th of October to, amongst others, yourself, Ms. Dindo, the same recipients she had addressed on the 24th of October asking for reports. And in this email, she's somewhat disconcerted. And she says, as you all know, the PP was supposed to release all the reports below. And she refers you to the reminder that was sent to all of you on the 24th, that all your reports should be submitted by the 25th and 26th. And she's deeply saddened to hear that only three reports were submitted for tomorrow's release. So it appears that the release was on the 31st of October, because this email is dated the 30th of October. And she says, obviously, this is the last straw for the PP, and I wish to remind you to initiate remedial action, consequence management against the senior investigators that have failed you. Investigations branch can safely be said is setting up PPSA to fail. We are in the dock. Check the status of reports that were supposed to have been issued tomorrow. This is bad news. We are going down. I'm so sorry to say this. To all the executive managers and GGI CIs that have failed and or neglected to submit their reports on 25 October 2018, can you provide reasons for your neglect and or failure by the 2nd of November 2018 before end of business? For your information and conscience, she says. She then has a list of the reports, presumably they were not submitted, correct?
Correct.
Number two in that report was your report, is that right?
Yes, correct.
And number 10 has your name against it. That was your report, is that right?
Yes, correct.
And numbers 5 to 8 were Mr. Abongile Madiba's reports, right?
Yes, as well as part of nine.
Was it part of numbers five, six, seven, eight,
and within nine, if you look at nine, there are, no, actually, these three reports, all of them, 5 to 9, is reported from Mr. Abongile Madiba's team, 5 to 9.
Was he in your unit at the time?
He would be in my unit a day after that from the first, because this email was sent on the 30th. In 2 days' time, he was going to report to me.
All right. To carry on in that email trail, and so these two reports that are that have your name against them, you had not submitted them in time as requested by Ms. Motsitsi, is that right?
Yes, correct.
Okay. Move up support to 3990. And then Ms. Motsitsi, of course, requested you to you all to submit reports and explanations as to why. Was this your explanation?
Yes, it was my explanation.
Move up. And you explained in the Peu matter what the issue was, and in the Dube matter what the issue was, right?
Yes, correct.
Right, move up. Support 3989. At the bottom. Yes. So on the 13th of November, Ms. Motsitsi then addresses an email to the PP. Do you see that?
Yes.
And she says, as discussed, please find the information received with regard to the Peu and Dube cases. I will proceed and request the latest update from Ms. Mokgaladi. So there, is she forwarding to the PP the explanation that you had given her about the Peu and Dube matters earlier, correct?
Yes.
Move up, 3989. Right, and on the same day, do you want to just tell the committee about that email? It's addressed to you, amongst others. It's addressed, well, you are copied in it. It's addressed to Ms. Motsitsi, you're copied to yourself and Mr. Vusi Mahlangu. What is the response of the PP?
The response was the PP was that was a directive to Ms. Motsitsi to issue a warning letter to myself for failing to send the letter to the Minister of Justice on the Dube matter immediately after the dashboard decision. She took 2 months to do that. And on the Peu matter, the PP stated that the matter had been pending since 2017. She said, if you check the task team list, you will see how many times the goalpost on our target was shifted.
Right. And if you go to the top, Tsepo, Ms. Motsitsi then responded and said to the PP that the contents are noted and told her that the Mbalula file and the Commissioner of Police file are en route to her office, if not there yet. Do you see that?
Yes, I can see that.
So these emails, go back to the affidavit, Tsepo, 3909. So just explain the context in which these emails occurred and the PP's instruction occurred. You do allude to it in paragraph 116, where you say, this happened just after you'd taken over the additional portfolio of acting EM. Can you just explain to the committee the pressures that you say you were under at the time?
I think maybe let me first start by putting the proper context on the two matters so that it is clear to the matters, to the members, what really the context within of what was happening in these two matters. On the two cases, both matters were pending in court. There were different actions at the various courts. Either one of the parties had taken the matter to court whilst our investigation was ongoing. For instance, with the Peu matter, that's what we commonly called it in the office, but it was a complaint against the City of Tshwane for awarding the smart prepaid meters contract to a service provider called Peu. After receiving the complaint as a public protector, whilst we were busy, the parties decided to refer the matter to court. And the issues that were pending before court were similar to the issues that we were dealing with as a public protector. Dube, it was an investigation that we had conducted, and we issued a 7-9, and the Minister of Justice, in responding to the 7-9, informed us the matter was pending in the Constitutional Court, and the minister indicated that we shouldn't proceed. He will revert back to the public protector once the Constitutional Court made a ruling on the matter, because the ruling of the court was relevant to the issues that was before the public protector. So when these instructions came, and if I relate it to my earlier explanation, it didn't really take into consideration even the reason for not submitting this matter, because the risk that we were running as a public protector was that if we issued a report or even a 7-9 whilst the matter was still pending, we ran the risk of issuing a report that might either be contradictory to what the court had said, or we might even decide on the same issues that were decided at the court and arrive at a different conclusion. And on the other matter, we had already made an undertaking to the minister. And at the time that this email was sent, that letter was already sent to the PP, so to the PP's office. Probably maybe the PP was not aware, but the letter had already been submitted to the PP's office during the last week of October. So the difficulty with some of these challenges is that when I took over with the GGI, I had to do everything possible to try and familiarize myself. So I indicated that one of the things that I was doing with the assistance of Advocate Malunga was to inspect the files just to try and see what is happening and provide directives on some of those cases. And we also noted that due to capacity constraints, there was a lot of backlog cases where not much had been achieved on the investigations at GGI. And our priority was to meet with the investigators during the day to go through those cases and provide directives. Therefore, it left me with only the evenings to do my work, both the GGI as well as the AJSD. So those were the difficulties that I was going through during that first few months at both AJSD and GGI.
And you say in paragraph 19, on the 16th of November, you then addressed an explanatory email to the PP setting out your challenges that you'd experienced in one of these matters, correct?
Yes, correct.
Tsepo, go to 3994. To 3994. Is this the email that you addressed to the PP on the 16th of November?
Yes, Chair.
So it's an almost three-page email. Can you just read what was the purpose of this email? And which matter, first of all, which matter were you addressing here?
I was addressing the matter of Peu, that is one of the issues where I was identified for the release during the media briefing at the end of October. It's one of those cases right. that were list that was on the list that was provided by Ms. Mutit.
I'm just going to pick some paragraphs for you to read to just for the benefit of the members as to what your challenges that you were trying to communicate were. Can you read, go down to the paragraph that begins one of the key challenges, the third paragraph?
Okay. One of the key challenges that we are dealing with, a matter that includes over 40 Agliva files of evidence submitted by the complainants, City of Tshwane, Peu, and affidavits from the two matters in there. One of the key challenges is that we are dealing with a matter that includes over 40 Agliva files of evidence submitted by the complainants, City of Tshwane, Peu, and affidavits from the two matters in the High Court.
And you state in the next paragraph, in the first sentence, that the other thing that makes it difficult is and challenging is that you are adjudicating on the same issues that are pending in court, right?
Yes, correct.
3995. And you also state there that in part of your explanation to the PP that the parties filed papers requesting the court to grant just an equitable remedy that's aimed at correcting what is seen as the improper administrative action, and a verbal ruling was granted. And as will be noted, you say, in the attachment, the typed order was granted at the end of October, correct?
Correct.
And you set out various challenges and explanations throughout relating to the matter. And can you read the last, so go down? The last two paragraphs, starting with, I hope this explains our challenges. Can you read that for the members, please, until the end?
I hope this explains our challenges. Personally, I'm also frustrated because the only time that I can do my other work is at night or early morning. The longest that I have slept over the last 2 weeks was 3 hours. I know PP will say that we are doing the work of the investigators, but he is a good investigator who got a bit overwhelmed by the volume of evidence. Can you scroll down? Once again, our sincere apologies, and on a lighter note, the blood of AJSD is on the top of the layer of our skin. So we are hoping that based on our overall performance and efforts, Public Protector will forgive us and the whipping stick can remain under the PP's table until Monday.
Correct. And the PP's response then appears at 3993. It's at the bottom. 3993, yeah? Yeah, at the bottom, yeah. Go down, yeah. That one. Yeah, there. She says, and you're going to go down to 3994. She says, good morning, Ms. Mokgaladi and team. AJSD to focus on the conduct of officials of COT. The evidence we have acquired from COT and not use affidavits or reports from other sources. Always remember the PP report is meant to address the root cause of impropriety and redress to those affected by the conduct. She says, I expect the section 7-9 by the end of business today, extension not granted. Correct. So she didn't grant you the extension you requested, correct?
Correct.
3993, yeah. And then the PP later on that day addresses an email to the CEO, Mr. Vusi Mahlangu, copying Ms. Motsitsi, and she says, this undermining, but I think she meant to say by the executives, has reached a point where I cannot tolerate. The Section 7-9 was not sent by Friday. Can the final written warning a warning be served on the executive manager, AJSD, and ACOO for not also ensuring that a supervisor that is done per my instruction. I want to see the warning letter by 3 o'clock this afternoon. Do you see that?
Yes, I can see that.
Was that sent to you? Go up.
Mr. Matlangu did not issue a warning letter as directed by the PP. Instead, he served myself and Ms. Ntorese Motsitsi with Audi letters.
But later on that day, as per this email, Ms. Motsitsi yes. did forward to you the PP's decision relating to the matter, and she was pleading with yes. you to submit the notice as a matter of urgency, right?
Yes.
And can you recall what happened after that? What you do say in paragraph 123 of your affidavit is that the combination of the immense pressure to produce reports not being heard and threats to one's livelihood made for a very difficult environment to work productively in pursuit of the very targets we were committed to meeting. Are you able to elaborate at all for the committee regarding that kind of stress and pressure?
I think at the time I really felt frustrated because I accepted the additional responsibility even though I was not being remunerated. I was hoping that I am going to assist the organization, and I really felt that notwithstanding the fact that I had indicated that I needed the support and understanding, instead, I had compromised myself as I suspected. I got frustrated. I was forever working, which I think it was untenable because it's unhealthy for any person to keep on sleeping for 3 hours. And I was even working over the weekends, and it became even more and more difficult to try and keep up. So I was frustrated. I did everything to try and catch up. Nothing was really working. I think the more I tried, it's the more it became even more difficult. I really felt defeated. And I think also, whilst it might be seen as Audi letters, I really felt that for me, the decisions or directives or instructions, whatever they might be seen as, they were not Audi letters. A decision was already made, because if you say that I must be issued with a warning, it means that you have already decided that I'm guilty. You have already decided that you are imposing a sanction on me, and the sanction is either a final warning or a warning. So I really felt that it's just not worth anything. It doesn't help to keep on explaining, because when we explained, no matter the substantive content of our explanations was not taken into consideration. What was more important was this was due on this date. No matter what challenges you were experiencing, it didn't matter. If I take, for instance, with the bail matter, I went at length to explain the challenges, and the PP responded to me by one liner, and the Audi letter that was given to me indicated that rather than submitting the notice, I submitted an apology and an explanation that was unacceptable. So it was frustrating because I felt that I was not achieving anything, because no matter how much I explained myself, the explanation would never be acceptable.
Thank you. Just a pause, Robert Mayus. I recognize the hand of Honorable Siabi.
Thanks, Chair, and my apologies. I just wanted to request that she speaks into the mic. Some of the words were unable to get them. Maybe if she speaks directly into the mic.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Siabi. Yeah. keep improving, Ms. Mokgaladi. Advocate okay. Mayusi, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. You say that you, on the 20th of November, you sought legal advice regarding this matter from Mr. Namasisi, right? In paragraph 124 of the affidavit.
Correct.
And I think the email trail where that appears begins from page 4000. Sepo? What did you seek legal advice about in relation to this matter from Mr. Namasisi on the 20th of November?
Okay, I think the overall challenge about this matter, is, as I have indicated, was that there was a pending High Court action in the city in the North Gauteng High Court. There was an order of court, which was a one page, but the full decision and judgment of the court was not yet issued. And initially the agreement was that we were going to pen this matter until we have a full judgment, and then we will decide on the way forward on are we provide or proceeding with the investigation, or have the issues been ventilated and correctly addressed by the court. Hence, we even went to court to go and upload the documents to the affidavits, just to try and keep ourselves up to date with the discussion. So the difficulty that we were facing was that we still did not have a court, the full judgment. So when I got the full judgment, that was the discussion that I had with Mr. Namasisi to say, now that we have the full judgment, how do we move forward to avoid the situation where we might be accused of having violated the provisions of the Constitution and the Public Protector Act that precludes the Public Protector from investigating court decisions. So our discussions centered around that. So it was mainly me checking that, like the area that I bolded, it was the main focus. And I think according to this email, we even had an earlier meeting and discussion around this matter. So the email was confirmation of some of the discussions that we had.
And the question you posed, one of the questions you posed to him, of course, was whether it would be proper to issue a Section 7-9 letter when you didn't warn implicated parties that you were investigating them and then confronting them with allegations of their conduct on the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, right?
Yes, it was based on the discussion that we had with Mr. Namasisi, where we said if we were to issue a Section 7-9, maybe we should consider the angle of making findings on the fruitless and wasteful expenditure that was based on the outcome of the court decision that had set aside the contract.
And Mr. Namasisi responded at page 3999. Just move up the bottom. Yes. And he responded, and in essence, he agreed with you, correct?
Yes, correct.
And he said that the implicated parties must be given an opportunity to respond to the allegations in any manner which is expedient in the circumstances, correct?
Correct.
And you had copied the acting COO in these discussions, Ms. Ntoriseng Mutsitsi, who also then joined the discussion above that email, correct?
Correct.
And she also, in essence, said she agreed. She has read through the emails that she'd been copied, and she agrees with you that issues of fruitless and wasteful expenditure can be addressed by the PPSA and so on, right?
Correct.
And she suggested that you write a memo to the PP to brief her and advise her that after a thorough analysis of the contents of the file, there was an obligation on the office to give those implicated in the investigation an opportunity to respond, correct?
Correct.
You then responded to the acting COO at 3998 SEPO. Go up. Yeah. Yes, that was your response to Ms. Motsitsi, is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
And in the second paragraph, you expressed the view that you, as regards writing a memo to the PP, you're not sure at this stage if the memo will help. Why did you have that view?
I had that view because I had been explaining myself over and over, and I really felt that the more I explained is the more the explanation is not taken into consideration. And I was really frustrated because we kept on submitting the request and then we wouldn't really get any support or any form of assistance from the PP in reconsidering the deadlines that were imposed. Instead, it was seen as if we are disrespecting the PP. And also, I was concerned by the earlier email that was sent that the disrespect by the EMs had reached the intolerable level. So if I write again, it would seem that I'm still continuing to disrespect the PP.
And you say in the last sentence of that email to the ACOO, you say, as stated and explained in my email, the delay is not aimed at disrespecting or undermining PP. There are challenges that, if not addressed properly, will embarrass us. And I cannot submit an incorrect letter or to PP. That would be malicious compliance, and I cannot do that. What did you mean by the phrase malicious compliance?
Okay, malicious compliance, I meant submitting things just for the sake of meeting the deadline, whilst I know that there might be issues. So I did not want to do that. I felt that it would not be proper for me to do that.
All right. Can you go to 4003, Tsepo? And so you say in your affidavit at paragraph 125 that Mr. Mahlangu will then issued you with this letter on the 20th of November, correct?
Correct.
And this is what you commonly know in your office as an Audi letter relating to the Beu matter, right?
Correct.
So you gave that as an example of what you described as the PP's inflexibility and rigidity in relation to the meeting of targets. But in paragraph 126, you also talk about her inflexibility in relation to a traumatic period when you had lost a family member. Do you mind telling the committee about that experience?
Okay. In April 2018, I have a niece who's my brother's daughter. And even though she's my niece, she was raised by my mom since she was two. So to me, she was more like a little sister. So I received the message on the 15th late at night that she was admitted to a hospital and the doctors had to perform surgery overnight. I come from the Northwest, so I was the closest because she was working in Polokwane. I was the closest, so I had to drive there to go and join the other sister who was already at the hospital. She was operated in the evening of Sunday. So I phoned PP and I requested to be excused from work on that Monday. So I drove to Polokwane in the evening. I sent a further message to the PP detailing the diagnosis and the news that we had received from the doctors. I went at length to explain the condition and also that from what the doctors had told us, there was really very little that they could still do medically. Then on the following morning, PP responded. I think my message was sent to PP late at night after we had consulted with the doctors. And then the following morning, PP responded and sent me a message comforting me. And then she also quoted a scriptural verse. Yes, that is the response from the PP where she says, thanks for the update, Bona. God is a miraculous God, and let's declare healing in your knees and cover her with the blood of Jesus Christ, and you and family keep strong. That was received around 5 to 9. It was just after I updated PP. The following morning, I wrote back. I said, good morning, PP. Thank you for your support. This was on, the PP's message was received on Tuesday, and then the 18th was a Wednesday. I said, good morning, thank you, PP. Thank you for your support. Unfortunately, we lost her yesterday, but we have accepted as a family that it is God's plan and she's resting in eternal peace. It was on a Wednesday. Then PP responded and said, good morning, Bona, condolences to you and family. Indeed, God is the comforter and he will heal the pain of losing such a young soul. God be your strength, the funeral will be this week. That was a question from PP. She said she was a young soul. She was about 34 and it was an emergency that led ultimately to her death. Then the following day on Thursday, the 19th of April, I received this WhatsApp message from PP saying, Bona, can I have all the letters and reports pending? She listed all the matters that she wanted from me at that point in time. The message concluded, I received a follow-up one which says, if I do not get the coma report today, I will have no option but to request the acting CO to initiate disciplinary process. The others, I want them by tomorrow at 14 hours. If nothing is delivered, I will also take action.
And you say you experienced this as the PP's rigidity during a traumatic period in your life.
It's true. It's true. Especially that my first message that went to the PP went at length. I disclosed the medical information, the nature of the diagnosis that pointed towards this being something that she had not been sick. I think my last conversation with her was the Friday before that. She was fine. She was driving from a workshop from in Gauteng. So in my message, I was explaining to the PP and I went at length to disclose because I wanted to be open and transparent with the PP so that she can understand what I was going through. And as I had mentioned, although she was my niece, this is someone that I was more like a sister. She was, I was close to her. So I felt that I needed to disclose. And I think also importantly, when I got the PP's message, it was on a Thursday, I was planning to drive back to Polokwane because the funeral was supposed to be that Saturday.
And then in your affidavit, you mention another incident, and you say this related to the late Mr. Abongile Madiba. Mm. Can you elaborate on that?
Okay. The late Abongile Madiba. Mr. Madiba was one of the hardworking, diligent, and skilled investigators in this office. I think he joined the office just after me. I think he had over 15 years in the office. He dealt with some of the very difficult and complex matters, and most of his cases withstood judicial scrutiny. And towards the end of 2016, he had completed and issued a report on one of the very difficult matters that we were dealing with at the time. And a few days, if not 2 days after that, he suffered stroke, and he was then partially disabled. He couldn't use the left side of his body. So I really felt that the ongoing demands from the PP and the rigidity towards Madiba, even though it was well known in the organization that Madiba was really struggling with his health. For instance, if he was expected to type reports, he was only using one hand. If he had to page through evidence, there must always be someone. One of the investigators had to sit with him to support him to page the documents. So I really felt that the pressure that was being put on Madiba was insensitive, if anything. And I felt that as someone who had diligently served the office, no sympathy was really, there was no sympathy on the part of the office at the time. And especially when it came to charging Mr. Madiba, he struggled to come to terms. He was really struggling, and probably that's why he couldn't even take the issue of the dismissal. Throughout, as we were going through the suspension, he kept on, his greatest fear was losing his job, because he really felt that he would not be able to afford medical attention that he required as a result of his condition. So he passed on, unfortunately, a month after the hearing. And from my interactions with her, even after the dismissal, he passed a very sad and a broken man. And I indicate that, in my view, no support or mercy was shown towards Madiba. He was too sick to defend himself. And for him to go through the hearing, he had to rely on his son for support, because he couldn't really to prepare the volumes and volumes of evidence. He always needed someone to assist him.
Right. So in the next section of your affidavit, you deal very briefly with other investigations that you were involved in or took part in your acting capacity in GGI. And in relation to the Busasa investigation, you say that you accompanied the PP and others to a meeting with the president, and also dealt with some correspondence and were present at some of the meetings. Was that all your involvement in that investigation?
Yes, in the Busasa investigation, I accompanied the PP to the meeting with the president, but it was at the early stages of the investigation and I also participated and sat in some of the subpoena hearings with some of the witnesses. But towards from March onwards, I was no longer actively involved in the matter. The investigators were submitting directly to the PP, and we're working directly with PP on the Busasa investigation.
And you also say in the pensions investigation involving Mr. Pile, you were part of the meeting with Minister Gordon, and in early 2019, you mentioned that that you'll be able to elaborate on the extent of your involvement in evidence. Is it what is it you want to elaborate on?
On this particular matter, after the investigator drafted the Section 7-9 notice, the COO then, being Ms. Baloyi, convened a meeting, a quality assurance meeting, where at the as the investigation team, we reviewed the draft Section 7-9 notice with the investigator just to ensure that it was quality, it was reviewed to ensure quality. So I was part of that meeting and I participated during the discussion of the draft Section 7-9 notice on the PLA pension matter.
And can you tell the committee about your involvement in the SARS unit investigation?
The SARS unit investigation was handled by Mr. Matabuge, who was a chief investigator that reported to me. He was working on that investigation with Ms. Buyana, who's an investigator in the office. When I joined GGI, this investigation was ongoing. I had scant involvement in this investigation at the beginning. According to my recollection, I was involved on the matter until mid-Feb, towards the end of Feb. As I mentioned, it's one of those that I found that was already being investigated by the team when I joined GGI. And as from the 1st of June, a decision was taken that Mr. Matabuge and his team would no longer be reporting to me. Okay. I also attended the meeting with the IGI on the 31st of January. It was a meeting that was convened by the public protector. I was part of the delegation from PPSA during that meeting.
You also make mention in paragraph 141 that you met with a complainant in this matter in December. Can you tell the committee about that, please?
Yes. After taking over from GGI, I think it was around the end of November, I was approached by the team with a submission. The initial submission was directed to the PP, where it had indicated that the complainant wanted to meet with the team to come and hand over the evidence. But I was informed that the PP was not available and the team was requesting, and they indicated that the PP's PA had informed that I should chair the meeting with the complainant. So I met with the complainant based on that. From my recollection of that meeting, I was with Mr. Matabuge. I tried to locate the recording so that I can speak with certainty around the attendees of that particular meeting. I struggled to get those recordings because we normally record our meetings, but I couldn't get the recordings. And then during that meeting, the complainant sent me a copy of a report, which I think it was a part of the evidence that the complainant indicated he wanted to hand over. And later on, this report was sent to me by email. I later on, when I opened the document, I looked at the first few pages. Based on the heading, I thought it was an SSA report because of the heading. And I never really looked beyond that matter because it was written secret on top. So I never went beyond to read the remainder of the document, and neither also did I disseminate or even print or do anything with a particular report. I just closed it and never got back to it. Actually, I did not even recall, because this was some time ago. I was reminded by the evidence leaders that they came across evidence that I have received this particular report, and I went back to my emails and I confirmed that I received the report, but I didn't do anything about it. And I was also included, okay.
Yes, carry on.
I was also included because I was part of the investigation at the initial stages. I was also included in some of the emails following the meeting that we had with the IGI. And also there was also some exchange of correspondence between the office and the Minister of State Security relating to possession of the classified IGI report. In one of the emails, the PP was instructing legal services to draft a letter to the minister disclosing the names of the people as stated in there. And then I think as I was preparing, I noted that there was another email whereby the PP indicated that the name of Mr. Mataboge must be retracted from the name of, it must be deleted from the name of the people who were in possession of that classified IGI report. So it would remain as per that letter that was sent to the minister. It would be everyone in there excluding Mr. Mataboge, according to the later email that was sent out by the PP.
Sorry, the last part, Honorable Gwanda says didn't hear you.
Okay, I'm saying, following this email, where as I was preparing, I'm going through some of my emails. I later realized that following this particular email, there was another email from PP where PP was correcting and sending a message to the senior manager, legal services, correcting that Mr. Mataboge was not in possession of the classified report. So I'm saying I'm correcting there and taking out his name from the list because there was a retraction and a correction to take out his name.
Advocate Mayos?
Yes, I'm just waiting for Sepo to put up a PM.
Yeah, the problem is you whispered that, so yes. I don't know what's happening.
Yes. PM19. You were copied in this email that is dated the 20th of February 2019. Do you see that?
Yes, correct.
Can you explain to the committee what this email arose from?
This email, as I have stated, it arose from the communication between the PP and the Minister of SSA relating to possession of the IGI report. So this was based on the discussion because the minister had responded back to the PP on a letter, if not subpoena, if I recall correctly, that was issued against the minister. So in there, the PP indicated that legal services can get a legal opinion from senior counsel, and she went on to elaborate there. And relevant to me, there was a question at the bottom of there where PP says, Bona, you have set top secret security clearance, right?
This is the email which you, this is the communication you mentioned in paragraph 144 of your affidavit, where you say you understood from this email that other people who had access to the report were Rodney, the chief of staff, PA, and the PP, correct?
Yes, and later on PP retracted the name of Rodney. Rodney is Mr. Mataboge.
So just for the sake of completion, what was your security clearance?
I have top secret security clearance that was granted in 2017.
All right.
It was second one. The first one that I had was in 2011. It expired, and another one was issued again in 2017.
You mentioned earlier when you were talking about your involvement in the SARS investigation that Mr. Mataboge and Ms. Mbuyana were not really reporting to you about this this investigation? Were they reporting to the PP directly, to your knowledge?
Yes, according to my knowledge, they reported to me at the beginning of the investigation, but as the investigation progressed, they were reporting directly to the PP.
Were you ever given the IGI report by the PP?
No.
I don't have further questions for this witness, Chair. And Chair, I have kept to the time.
You had no choice. You had no choice. And thank you for keeping to 3 o'clock. Thank you, Advocate Mayosi. It's exactly 3 o'clock, as promised.
The five minutes
has been of gifted to Advocate Mpofu. Thank you. We will now proceed to the next item, which will be the beginning of a cross-examination. And I will recognize Advocate Mpofu to start cross-examination. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I just want to say to Advocate Mayosi that all of us would keep to the time, Chair, if we were given the kind of generous times that she gets given. But it's easy to meet a target if it's extended.
No, but, you get yours too.
I've never had until 3 o'clock.
No, you get yours too. So you will start now.
Okay.
Until 5 o'clock, and you'll continue tomorrow.
Yes, I'll continue tomorrow. Chair, well, I might even finish earlier than that. I'm just going to place a few issues on the record. Chair, can I do that? Just place a few issues on the record and explain how I'm going to approach the cross-examination. Okay, the first issue is to do with, there's a document which has been sent to us, which is a purported waiver of the confidentiality clause that is contained in the Public Protector Act, which has been issued by the Deputy Public Protector or Acting Public Protector. And we just have a view about that, which we want to place on the record. For what it's worth, again, for the usual reasons, so that one day we're not accused of having acquiesced in it. But it might be appropriate. Unfortunately, we had planned to have a discussion on this, myself and Advocate Bauer, over lunch, and then we just didn't get the time, or we forgot. We discussed other things. So I thought maybe, Chair, it might be appropriate for her to explain what that document is, and then I will then place on the record what our objection is. Thank you. That's what we've arranged.
Maybe without putting the letter on the screen, I'll put it into context. There is a provision under the Public Protectors Act, Section 7.2, which deals with investigations by the public protector, and it says, notwithstanding anything to the contrary contained in any law, no person shall disclose to any other person the contents of any document in the possession of a member of the Office of the Public Protector, or the record of any evidence given before the Public Protector, the Deputy Public Protector, or person contemplated in subsection 3B during an investigation, unless the Public Protector determines otherwise. Now, there's two ways one can look at it. The most obvious one is that you can't do this during an investigation, but there may be more leeway after that. But that interpretation in itself may be problematic because certain information is given to you, for example, by people who give it to you under the whistleblower provisions alternatively people who give it to you anonymously for security reasons, etc. And so there's a proviso in it that says, unless the public protector determines otherwise. So irrespective of the interpretation you want to put to the clause prior thereto, I had a look at it. We consulted with a number of employees at the public protector's office who would be bound by this provision, who would have to come and give evidence before the inquiry. There's also the question of privilege that lies within the lies with the incumbent. And I requested that they provide the employees, be it that they come and give evidence for the evidence leaders or whether they give evidence for the whether they're called by Mr. Mpofu, would then be issued with a waiver in order that they're not at any point accused of transgressing Section 7.2 of the Act. That was all that it was intended to be. There is a caveat that there are ongoing investigations that should be protected, that and that we must use our common sense in that regard, and it's not intended to attach that to ongoing investigations. There is also a very narrow line between ongoing litigation, and it shouldn't be abused for that purpose before this inquiry either. And had Advocate Mpofu and I had an opportunity to have that discussion, then I would have certainly indicated to him that it's simply to ensure that within the context of the mandate that those who give evidence before the inquiry neither abuse the powers that they are given very widely under the Act, but that they also not seem to be transgressing the Act. That's the reason why, at my request, this was granted.
Thank you, Chairperson. The only thing we want to place on the record is that we don't accept that the provisions of the Act can simply be quote unquote waived in that fashion. And maybe we'll engage with the evidence leaders as to how that real issue that Advocate Bauer has raised may be better navigated. And again, just for the record, we align ourselves with the interpretation of the section that says the phrase during an investigation clearly does not mean that the prohibition only applies during an investigation. It obviously applies to any information which was acquired during an investigation, whether it's 10 years later, it shouldn't matter. So we agree with that interpretation, and that's exactly why we were worried about the terms of the waiver, because it seems to suggest that it makes a distinction between finalized investigations and ongoing investigations, which is incompetent if you interpret the section broadly, which is what we prefer. So that's the issue, Chair, which is wanted to place on the record about the so-called waiver. And as I say, we'll try and cooperate with the evidence leaders to deal with that issue, because it will obviously also affect some of our witnesses.
Just before you proceed to whatever next issue you have, so there's a question that both of you are not answering. Why are you raising this thing now? Does this have to do with this witness?
Yes.
So that, because I'll have to make a ruling either now or any time that we determine. So you both of you are not addressing that.
Okay.
You seem to be, and I'm interested to understand why the issue is raised. Yeah. So what is your expectation?
Sorry, there's no, I don't think there's an expectation other than the following. Advocate Mpofu had reservations about the waiver. He was kind enough not to interrupt the evidence being led by Advocate Mayusi because he had walked in this morning when we had already started.
I don't get the part that he was kind enough not to interrupt, because what has that to do with the witness that we have?
Sorry, Chair. This witness has a waiver.
Mm.
That's maybe what we should have started off saying to you. And subsequent witnesses who are currently in the employ of the Public Protector's Office, whether they're called by us, whether they're called by Advocate Mpofu, will be afforded a waiver. And there were concerns about the waiver being granted, and Advocate Mpofu wanted to place that on the record, but he didn't regard it as being of such a nature that it warranted interrupting Advocate Mayosi in a direct. So he said to me he would place it on the record before he cross-examined. That's instead of his usual morning placing on the record, he's doing it now instead of then.
Yeah, Chair, if I may assist. I think the short answer to your question, why now, is simply because the letter that I've referred to, which comes from the acting public protector, is addressed to this witness, as it was explained. And it's the first one. It's obviously meant to be the first one of its kind, but it's addressed to her. So it applies to this evidence, and that's why we're raising it now.
Okay. I hope members follow, but maybe at this point, as you proceed to other issues and cross-examination, I would indicate that we would apply our mind on the issue,
yeah,
and would make a determination.
Okay, yeah, thank you. Then you can
proceed,
Chair,
to the other issues.
Thank you very much, Chair. Then the next issue, Chair, is we had an agreement with the evidence leaders, or let me say an arrangement, because for it to be an agreement, it would have to, it's your show, Chair, so I don't think we're allowed to have agreements here. So, and that arrangement was, that arrangement, can I at least finish speaking here? Yeah. That arrangement was that this witness was scheduled for a period of 2 days, which is what you've indicated. And the arrangement we had, because of the span of this witness's evidence, was that I would do my cross-examination tomorrow. There's a whole set of documents, some of which we have just presented or supplied to the others, to the evidence leaders. And it may or may not evoke one or two questions before we start. I doubt that it will. It's just documents that we want to put on the record. But so that is one of the reasons. But so I'm asking, ordinarily I'd be asking for permission to break now so that I start my cross-examination tomorrow, having covered all those things. But as I indicated over lunch with the evidence leaders, even if you grant me that indulgence, can I ask for another indulgence, which is that I cover some of the ground, some of the high level issues with the witness, because it may save us a lot of time and also focus the areas that I'm going to deal with tomorrow, rather than wasting time tomorrow with material which might not be necessary. So yes, that's what I wanted to request, Chair.
Yes, definitely we have time now, so we'll allow you to get your partial start. So you're looking for instead of a main meal, you're looking for a starter course.
Yes.
Go for it.
Thank you.
It will save us time. Save us time.
Certainly, yeah. Will. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
I thought Honorable Gondo wanted to raise something.
Just before you proceed, Honorable Gondo.
Chair, you've lost us. We're not entirely sure which letter was being referred to that had been written to Ms. Mokgaladi. So if you could just bring us up to speed, because I was completely lost. I don't know if I'm the only one who doesn't know about the letter.
You mean the doc- document they were referring to.
Yes, apparently there's a letter that's been written by the acting public protector to Ms. Mohaladi. So I wanted context around the letter and then, you know.
Okay, let's hear the evidence later.
I think I've just asked Advocate Bao to put it up. I think it will make it easier.
And as you will see, the letter is addressed to Ms. Mohaladi. And if you could go down, and the context of the letter is current employees giving evidence before the inquiry. And paragraph 2 is probably the relevant section. As I indicated earlier on, section 7.2 imposes confidentiality requirements with a caveat that says unless the public protector determines otherwise. And so to this end, authority is granted to you in terms of section 7.2 for the disclosure of the contents of any document in possession of a member of the office of the public protector with a record of any evidence given before the public protector, the deputy public protector, or a person contemplated in subsection 3B of the Act, which would be its employees and investigators during any finalized investigation that you may be involved in your capacity as the executive manager investigations. That's in Ms. Mohaladi's case. It may be required as material evidence relevant to the formation motion before the committee. So what it doesn't contemplate, that says finalized investigations, it doesn't allow them to speak on matters which are currently pending. Public protector reserves the right on a case-by-case basis to review the resolutions in respect of individual matters where such disclosure may adversely affect the vested rights of individuals or institutions. And one could see that from the affidavits that are prepared. And if they have any concerns, they must raise it. And that authority will lapse on the conclusion of these proceedings. Thank you. My apologies, we were looking too short.
Honorable Heron.
Thank you, Chair. Just it raises other questions about whether the previous witnesses who are currently employed by the public protector, whether they also had a waiver.
The previous witnesses, so Mr. Don't get involved in investigations. They are.
And Mr. Samuel?
Mr. Samuel, yes, I think. Let me qualify that. Mr. Samuel requested a waiver, and I think it was granted whether he had the letter by the time he got it. I'm not entirely sure, but there was. I did have a conversation with him about Mr. Samuel. Yeah, let me double check on that. But I did request the waiver. In fact, the subject came up in the context of Mr. Samuel when I had that conversation. I was reminded by Ms. Mohaladi on Friday as to about the waiver. But I did have a conversation with the BP's office about it in the context of Mr. Samuel. And I was given the assurance that he would have the waiver. But I can't say that I saw the letter.
Sure.
I didn't request it in respect of, Mr. Tabele and Mr. Chialele, because I didn't understand them to be involved in investigations.
Chair, if I may just round off, I think Honorable Heron has raised an important issue. And I think, again, it will form part of whatever discussions we'll have with the evidence leaders. It's not just Mr. Samuel who was involved in investigations. Definitely not Jalela, but Gekana, Raidani, Tabele, some of the previous witnesses that would be covered by Honorable Heron's question. So I think we'll just have to find some legal solution to it, but I think. at some stage, just so that we don't run into that legal hurdle.
Yeah, you can't go to idea. You can't go to legal solution when there's no clarity up front. There must be that first, and then we can talk about that.
No, Chair, I agree. All I'm saying is that I'm glad that we're discussing this, because now we've got it even in a wider ambit. But surely we can't discuss it here now and have a nice legal debate.
Thank you, Advocate Mbofu. Are you done, Advocate Bauer?
I think instead of wasting the committee's time, let me and Advocate Mbofu sort it out. I must say, you're right. I didn't contemplate it in relation to employees who had left, but there may well be a reason to do so, that we do that for their protection as well. But it came up in the context of existing employees involved in investigations, which was the context in which I addressed it. But it must be something that Advocate Mpofu and I can sort out.
Advocate Mpofu, can you please proceed?
Thank you,
cross-examination.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Ms. Mohaladi.
Good afternoon, Advocate Mpofu.
Thank you, ma'am. You had that discussion I had with the chair. I'm going to ask you more detailed questions tomorrow morning, but I just wanted us to cover some high level areas which might cut down literally some hours from the cross-examination, depending on your answers to those issues. Do you understand, ma'am?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. All right. Okay, maybe just for context, and at the risk of sounding like a broken record, I've been trying to say that we don't want to turn this committee into the complaints office of the Public Protector South Africa, or a branch of the CCMA, or the Labour Court even. So we try not to get involved in the nitty-gritty of the labor dispute themselves, but only insofar as they may be relevant to the motion. You understand that distinction. You are a legally trained person, correct?
Correct.
Yes. So you understand what I've just said?
I think I do, but you can clarify further.
Yes, I can clarify. No, yeah, what I'm saying is that we don't want a situation where the merits or demerits of the legal and labor disputes that feature from witnesses like you to be presented as if this committee's job, for example, is to find who's right, who's wrong on the merits. But by saying that, we're not saying that some of those issues might not be relevant to the motion. But so we only deal with them insofar as they are relevant to the motion before this committee, you understand, without expecting this committee to express a view on the merits. Well, they will if they want, but that's not what they should do. You understand?
Okay. Yes, correct. Thanks. Understand, yeah. Yes.
Thank you, ma'am. Now, the first issue, therefore, that I want to clarify with you, and this one literally, as I say, might cut down a lot of my cross-examination tomorrow, is this. Do I understand correctly that in respect of your labor matter, which resulted in the suspension and the labor court dispute and all that, your case has only been centered around the question of sanction. In other words, that whole dispute as to whether the public protector is entitled, empowered, call it what you will, to alter the recommendation or finding of the chairperson of the DC, Advocate Kuboni. Do you understand the question?
Can you repeat the question so that I do understand?
Okay. I want to repeat the commentary part because I was just identifying which dispute I was talking about. The real question, crisply put, is, am I correct to assume that your gripe or dispute regarding that issue was only confined to the issue of sanction? In other words, whether the PP was entitled to alter the sanction?
Just to clarify, are you referring to the Labour Court? The Labour
yes,
Court
the Labour Court dispute, the one, that's why I was trying to identify, the one that resulted in suspension and litigation, yes.
Yes, the Labour Court matter that resulted in the judgment of 28 May was focused on the sanction.
Right. And you also, in the build-up, before you even went to the Labour Court, you made some submissions to the chairperson of the DC regarding the sanction, you know, the normal, mitigation of sanction type of evidence. You led such evidence, correct?
Correct.
Right. So you effectively have never taken issue with the finding itself, with the finding of guilt, but you've taken issue with the dismissal, alleged dismissal or intended dismissal, sorry. Correct?
Correct.
Thank you very much. Okay, that chair will assist us quite a lot here. All right, I'm avoiding having to get into the whys and wherefores of the actual finding of guilt if the only gripe was about the sanction. All right, thank you, ma'am. Then the next issue that I want us to converse is just a question of timing. Just for your information, I'm sure you don't know this because you're not as intimately involved with this matter as the people who are directly involved. But just for your information, the motion that is before this committee was passed in around about February 2020, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the report of the independent panel was issued in February of the following year, February 2021. Yeah, understand that?
Mm-hmm. I follow?
Yes, sure. So again, I just want to situate some of the events that you have testified about would have happened after both the motion and the independent panel report. By that, for example, the sanction, both by the chairperson and the intended sanction, as I call it, by the public protector, would have happened in March 2021, after both of those events. Are we together?
Yes, the sanction happened afterwards, but the disciplinary happened prior to that period.
Okay, good. Yes, the actual DC sitting was before, but the sanction and the Labour Court litigation and all that happened afterwards, correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you. All right. And All right, thanks. We'll come back to that again tomorrow. Then on another topic, am I right that the gist of the charges against you for which you were found guilty, which we have now discussed, which is not part of your was not part of your legal contest, centered around gross negligence, or allegations, let me put it that way, of gross negligence and misconduct with sub charges, as you said, but that really, that was the gist of what you were being accused of, correct?
Correct.
All right. And so effectively, what you were contesting then is that somebody at your level, which is very, very senior, who is found guilty of gross negligence and misconduct, should not be dismissed, but they must simply be suspended for a couple of months. That's the gist of your case. I know I'm simplifying it, but am I more or less correct that that's what you took to court?
No, you are not correct, Advocate. What we took to court was that the public protector should comply with the internal policy.
Yes, fair enough.
The issue was about compliance with the internal policy.
Sorry, ma'am. Sorry, I missed
the
that.
The issue was about, I'm saying the issue that we took to court was that the public protector should comply with the PPSA disciplinary code.
Yes, by making sure that what she was intending to do, which was to mete out a dismissal, is not done, correct?
No, the correct provision in the code, and the main source of our dispute was that the public protector appointed an independent chairperson. And in terms of the policy, the chairperson submits a report, a final report to the public protector for implementation. So we're saying to the public protector, you have received a report of the chairperson, implement it and not change it. If you are unhappy with it, as the labor court in the judgment said, then you can take it on review. But you appointed the chairperson and comply with your own internal policy.
Yes, no, ma'am. I think maybe we're not understanding each other. I accept what you're saying. I'm making a different point. That might have been what you were putting in your papers, but your real intention was to stop her from meeting out a dismissal. Let me put it this way. And if you can just give me an honest answer to this question. If you know that the chairperson said he was making a recommendation, correct?
I noted that he said he was making a recommendation.
Yeah, all right, he did. Now, the chairperson said you should be on unpaid suspension for 3 months, correct?
Yes, correct.
Yes. So if you give me an answer to this question, if the public protector said, I'm looking at this, the chairperson says Ms. Mukhaladi should be on suspension for 3 months unpaid, but I don't accept this recommendation. I think she should just be on unpaid leave for 1 month. I'm sure you would not have taken that to the labor court, correct?
Advocate Mpofu, I think what is key is that the Constitution guarantees everyone fair labor practice. And the gist of the labor court matter was to make sure that we are treated fairly. So if the public protector had decided to give us that 1 month, it would have been something that we are considering. But it doesn't take away from the fact that the policy says that the chairperson is submitting the decision for implementation. So if the public protector decided to change that, that would have been the decision. All that we wanted was that be fair, comply with the code.
Okay, sorry, the chair wants to interrupt.
Can I just break your for 10 minutes? We'll take a break.
Okay, chair. Thank you.
We'll take a 10 minutes tea break. Thank you.
Recording stopped.